War doesn't end when you leave the battlefield. The hardest fight comes after service. Identity, purpose, and tribe. Where do you stand when the uniform comes off? This is where we talk about it. No bullshit, no filters, just real stories from those who've been through it. This is the Great Guns Podcast with your host, James Scott.
Hi, everybody. Another podcast from Great Guns. And today we have a fantastic guest who is ex-RAF. She flew helicopters for a living, but now is very much in the keynote speaking world. So I'd like to say a big warm welcome to Sarah Furness. Hi, Sarah.
Hello, how are you doing?
All right, thank you. Thanks very much for joining us today. I know we've had you on before with regards to a great speech you did for some cadets that I'm involved with and work with, and they absolutely loved it. So that's what made me think, got to get you on the show. So thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me.
If we could just, in about a 60-second nugget, if you like, just give a bit of background as to what your story is, where you've come from, and what you're up to.
Sure. Yeah, of course. So, Sarah Furness, as you've already said, I spent 21 years in the Air Force as a helicopter pilot. So that was military service. And during that time, deployed to places like Iraq and Afghanistan. And then latterly, so in a year and a half ago, I left and I started up my own business, and I now do executive coaching and also a lot of keynote speaking, because I discovered that a lot of people wanted to hear stories about helicopters. So I use the helicopter stories as a vehicle to help coach people to perform better in the workplace.
Was that a big transition for you when you left services? Did you struggle to find your way into that, or did you walk out knowing that's the sort of line that I want to move into?
I think I was pretty ready to try something new. And because I started up my company when COVID hit us, so that meant that we were all working from home mostly anyway. So I think it gave me a bit of a gentler transition than many people experience when they leave the service. And I was pretty dedicated on this idea of helping other people to perform at their best. So I probably found it easier than maybe some other people have.
There is a little story that I did want to ask you about, because I think for what Great Guns is about, I think that is a key thing. And it was to do with when you first decided to go into the RAF, you had a few challenges. It was to do with the fact that as a woman, there was a bit of resistance towards you guys becoming, because you actually wanted to fly fast jets, I believe.
Yeah, I did. I don't think anyone tried to put me off necessarily, but it wasn't very common for women to get through, and still isn't. It's still very male dominated. So we're going back 20 odd years now. So I was 16 when I first applied. And back then, yeah, it was very rare for women to get through. And I think one of the big hurdles that I faced was you have to go through the aptitude. So you have to actually pass the aptitude tests. And back then, 24 people would go through the selection, and it was women, it was single sex syndicates. And I think 23 of us were applying to be a pilot. And at some point we were told that only one of us had passed the aptitude for pilot. And I don't know if that's true or not, but we all knew, you know, 22 of us were going home disappointed. We didn't know who the lucky person was. And I know that I did pass the aptitude. So I don't know if I was the only one, but I remember at that time it reminded me that the chances of getting through are vanishingly small, but I did. And then I returned the following year to apply for university sponsorship because I wanted to go to uni and then join the Air Force afterwards. And this time I thought I was pretty assured of getting through because I'd already been through once. But this time they told me my arms were too short and I couldn't be a pilot. And because I'd been through before, I thought that can't be right because I've already passed the medical. And the doctor said, we must have thought you were going to grow, but you haven't. And I was still just dumbfounded at this news. And I remember this was the moment he just sighed and took his glasses off and said, let me make it very clear for you, you're never going to be a pilot. And I'll never forget those words. So I went back home and had a rethink. And it was my mother and I were looking at the medical reports of the two times that applied. And we noticed that my arms had shrunk from the age of 16 to 17. We thought that can't be right. So basically spent about 6 months ringing the Air Force up every couple of weeks saying, can you re-measure me? I think you've made a mistake. And they finally relented. And I managed to just scrape across the line. In the meantime, my mum had found me a personal trainer so that I could stretch my arms. And I managed to sneak through. And I was very grateful to be able to do that. So it was a lot of women got turned away because women tended, you know, tended to be smaller. I think we're all probably getting a bit taller now, but back then we were just all a bit smaller. And I remember the doctor, when he finally signed me off to be a pilot, he said, please don't tell any other women because I'll have them all beating down my door to be remeasured. So I've made it a point of trying to tell as many people as I can, because I think it is sometimes you just have to be a bit persistent to get through.
Yeah, I think very much, I know from my own personal kind of life, there's a certain point in my life I know I needed to be should have been a bit more persistent in what I was trying to achieve. But I don't regret it. The thing that I was trying to do didn't happen, but then other things did and opened other doors for me. But yeah, persistence, I think sometimes people don't want to go down that route because they think, oh, people just think I'm a pest, I'm a pain. But if you believe in something so strongly, you sometimes do need to just keep pushing. It's that water on the dam. You just got to keep pushing and then eventually it breaks. And then, oh, wow, there's this massive opportunity.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember that story. And that's what I might not have alluded very well to it. So
I tell so many, I'm like, oh, no, which one was it?
I don't know what story you're talking about. So another question I was wanting to ask you was, obviously, you're in the military, everything's regimented, you have to be at certain places at certain times, and often you don't have the choice to do all of that. But in civilian world, we have choices, and often we don't make the right choices, or we just lack of motivation and so on. So what is it for you, what motivates you to get off the couch and actually get out there and do the things that you're doing?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think a lot of the reasons that we don't make choices often is because we're scared. We're scared that if we try, we might fail, or that we might succeed, and then we've set ourselves a new precedent that we've got to keep doing. So I think you've got to have a bit of hope, really, and maybe almost blind optimism. And I think that's what I had when I was young, because I'd watched Top Gun and when I was 12. And when you're 12, you don't know any better, do you? You don't know if you're going to be good or bad at something. So you have the luxury of imagining that you're wonderful. And I think that my parents really helped me just to keep that kind of blind faith that, you know what, just give it a go and it might work out. But I think also it's a bit of a chicken and egg, because I think getting off the couch is the thing that motivates me to get off the couch. I get my best inspiration when I've gone out for a run and I start to imagine all sorts of wonderful things that I've managed to achieve. And I think I find that's really energizing for me. So I think for me, the key to getting out there and trying things is just to put those trainers on and just take those first few steps. And then you'll find once you put a tune on and you start letting your brain kind of wander and just have no shackles and just imagine the best and the worst, then I think you can feel quite energized and quite hopeful for what you might be able to do.
Yeah, and it's interesting, over the last couple of interviews that I've done, the words that keep coming through is just take those steps, or just take that first step. And I think, like you say, I think a lot of people are often quite scared of just doing that. But at the end of the day, what can happen?
Exactly. And I think also it's important to remember that we all feel that kind of fear. So there's nothing unusual about you. There's nothing weak about you. It's the human condition. The human condition is to stay in our comfort zone, because that's what keeps us alive. You don't need to give yourself a hard time or feel shame for finding it comfy on the old couch. You know, recognize that this is part of the human condition, but equally you don't have to be hostage to those fears. They're quite natural, but you can still decide to take those first steps, even though it might feel a bit scary.
Yeah, and I think it's like you mentioned in when you're telling us the story about your parents helped encourage you, so it's important to have that network around you of supportive people, which I find often people are drawn back by others, not necessarily by themselves.
You mean as in other people can be a limit to them, perhaps?
And again, from my own perspective, doing various things, my wife and I have done some crazy things, adventures, and often people around you go, oh, you can't do that. Oh, no, just go and get a job. Like, why do you want a business? And they'll try and talk you out of it, but that's more about them than it is about you. So it's good to have that network where you've got that support around you.
So yeah, absolutely.
Crazy ideas. To ask you if you could be a member of our Terrible Ideas Club. So it's basically, has there been an idea that you thought, oh, that could be a terrible idea, but it's worked out, or possibly hasn't worked out for you, book that's maybe given you some good life lesson or something else that, you know, that other lessons that you've taken from it?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this all day and a big long list came to mind. A lot of them weren't actually necessarily my ideas. It was almost just going with the flow. So it was other people's ideas. So I've dismissed those. So I think that probably the most terrible idea, it's nothing that crazy, but it was when I left the Air Force and I had this idea that I was going to cure the world. I had my own ups and downs and battles with kind of resilience. And I became a bit of a evangelist about mindfulness and well-being. And I wanted to fix people. I desperately wanted everyone to feel happy and to never experience another sad moment in their life. And I particularly wanted to get through to, dare I say it, men of a certain age, because I saw that they were the untouchables and they didn't think it applied to them, because I'd seen lots of them in the military just denying themselves of support. So I think I wanted to go out and fix the world and save the world. And the problem with that is that people don't want to be fixed. They're not going to be. You can't tell people what's right for them. And also, it's a bit of ego talking. Of course, we want to leave the world in a better place than we started. Everybody wants that legacy. But I think it's okay to admit that there's a bit of ego in there. It makes us feel good if we can help people and fix people. But actually, that's not necessarily the best way to help them. You're turning them into a mini version of yourself, or into the image of yourself, isn't necessarily what's right for them. It might feel very satisfying for you, but it's not what's right for them. So I learned, rather than being on the Sarah show and trying to make everyone think like me, I think I learned to really listen to people a bit more and go, tell me what it is that you need. But also I learned to listen to what people thought I had that could help them. And that's where I went from transition of mindfulness coach to keynote speaker, because people were like, we love all that mindfulness stuff, Sarah, but can you tell us some helicopter stories? Because we're actually much more interested in how you manage to stay cool under pressure. Can you tell us about that? So I learned to get over myself a little bit and stop trying to force people to listen to what I thought they should listen to. And actually, if they want to hear about stories about performing under pressure, then why not tell them those stories? If that's going to help them, then, you know, who cares, as long as people are getting something out of it.
No, definitely. It is. If you can impart just by the stories that you tell, that you can impart some knowledge that someone goes, oh, hang on, that's interesting. Maybe I should try that in my life. Then exactly, you're still helping people achieve more without having to kind of bash them over the head with a manual going, this is how it's done. So, yeah. You mentioned about your own resilience as well. And that's obviously quite key to what I'm trying to achieve through Great Guns, is helping people not only be motivated, but just also to try and help them be a bit more resilient and being aware of their own mental health, and that issues with mental health doesn't necessarily mean they've got to run off to a doctor and get a load of pills to try and fix them, that they can self, I'm not going to say medicate, because that's not what I'm going to say, that they can self-repair their mental state by literally doing things that kind of push them out their boundaries and just getting out there, and whether it's just going for a walk or doing some more physical. So you spoke about you had issues with your own resilience. So how did you deal with it? What process did you follow through that?
Yeah, trial and error, definitely. I think I definitely thought there was something wrong with me. I wasn't anxious or depressed. I was bloody angry. I was just raging at the world because it was so unfair. And anger is an emotion that wants to stay alive. And it makes you a bit of an arse as well. People don't really want to hang out with you. So I tried to correct my thinking. I tried to fix my thoughts and come up with alternative thoughts. But I just ended up fighting with myself more and more the more I did that. And thinking that there was something fundamentally wrong with me and that I was broken, which just leads to more self-loathing and probably more anger. So I eventually, and this is where mindfulness really helped me, because I learned just to sit with my anger and stop trying to fix it and stop trying to stop being angry. And that doesn't mean you throw yourself a pity party or go around smashing things. It just means that you just learn to sit with that feeling and go, it's okay that I feel like this. It's okay that I don't like feeling like this. And I can tolerate this. And that's called sitting with difficulty. It's also referred to as acceptance. It's referred to as distress tolerance. But these are skills that you can practice. And then you learn, actually, I'm not broken. I'm healing. And then I could see underneath all this anger, I was actually just scared that I wasn't enough and that people would reject me if I showed up as myself. But it wasn't until I learned to sit with those surface feelings, I suppose, that I could see that underneath it all, I was worried that I wasn't enough for people and I didn't really love myself. And I suppose the cliche is true, it all starts with self-love, but we're very good at putting lots of barriers up and not being able to see that. And then we tell ourselves that we're broken and we need some medication. But actually, sometimes we just need to learn to accept ourselves. So that's why I try to help people, just to see that this is the human condition. There is nothing wrong with you. It doesn't mean that you have to be hostage to it. It doesn't mean you have to go out there and behave badly. But you certainly don't need to feel any shame for feeling these kinds of emotions.
Definitely. You know, at the end of the day, there's so many of us that are dealing with these issues that often you can think you're alone. Or you look at certain people, you might see them on TV or they've written a book or whatever, and you think, oh, they've got it all together. But a lot of the time, they're going through the same things as you might be. Yeah. So when you're talking about mindfulness and sitting with those feelings, did yoga, I know that you do yoga, did that have a big part in it? Or was that, did that come later on?
I'm
trying to find out about like the practical side.
No. So truthfully, I don't do a lot of yoga. That was me prattling about trying to take cool photographs, which I have used many times since. I know. But I do meditate, and you can meditate. You know, there are lots of things that you can do to practice mindfulness, and yoga is a very mindful activity because you're focusing your attention where you want it to be. You're in the present moment. So absolutely, yoga is one way to practice mindfulness. I like to just do it the old-fashioned way, focus on my breathing. You can do it by going for a walk and connecting with the outside world. As long as you're focusing your attention where you want it to be and you're in the present moment, that's mindfulness. And there's lots of ways that you can do it. And I think the trick is to find a way that works for you so that you can do it on a daily basis. And the more you practice focusing your attention where you want it to be, the more you start to realize that actually I do have some agency over what is going on in my head. And the next time it feels like a battlefield, I've got some techniques that I can call on just to get to self-soothe, as you said, self-medicate. I knew you meant by that. So you've got the tools and the equipment that you need to get through the chaos that is life.
That reminds me of the story I think you told about where, when you were flying, you had a little accident and everything was about to go to pot, but someone said something to you. Could you tell us that story? Because I think it's got such a poignant point in it. You do get freaked out and just everything goes out the window, whereas if you can concentrate on that one thing. So if you wouldn't mind telling us that story, just...
Yeah, of course. So it was fairly early on in my flying career when I went helicopters, and we were actually deployed out to Morocco, and we were low flying through this valley, which was brilliant fun. And then we came around the corner and I remember the canopy just shattered and the cockpit got very noisy as air started rushing in. And we'd actually just hit high tension electricity cables that were strung across this valley. And they weren't marked on the map. You can't see them when you're flying at that kind of speed. But we'd actually hit the wires in three places. We didn't know that then. And I remember thinking, oh, they're probably going to wrap themselves around my tail rotor and pull the tail rotor off. And we're going to spin into the ground and die. All this is happening in nanoseconds. But I remember just thinking, oh, this is how I'm going to die. And I remember feeling kind of oddly at peace that it would be a sort of quick death. And then the captain of the aircraft said, fly the aircraft, Sarah. Those were his words. And that was the moment when I went, oh, and I came back into the cockpit and went, oh my goodness, we're still flying. And then I focused on flying the aircraft and I didn't focus on anything else until I got on the ground. And that was a really key moment because, although I didn't maybe realize it at the time, our attention can only be in one place at a time. We think we can be all over the place. But actually, and if you think about when you're trying to tune into two different conversations or trying to listen to two conversations, you have to tune into one at a time because you cannot focus your attention in more than one place at a time. And that means that where we focus our attention, particularly under pressure, is incredibly important. And in that moment, I was focusing on death, which isn't going to help me at all. And I needed to focus on the controllable. I needed to focus on the moment, which was flying the aircraft. And what is that if not mindfulness? And who knew that you could practice it when you've just crashed into wires? But there you go.
Yes, especially at a time when something's so dangerous that you're in such a dangerous situation that you can experience mindfulness. But I just love that saying, just fly the aircraft. And obviously, for a lot of us, we've never flown an aircraft, but I still think that the line is actually quite poignant, because it is about just focus on that thing that you're trying to achieve there and then. Forget everything else. That's what you need to be concentrating on. Yeah, otherwise you just get lost in the the noise, if you like.
Yes.
But yeah. Yeah. Now, another question that I have for you is, coffee is obviously a big part of my life in Great Guns. We always like to ask, if you were a coffee, what coffee would you be and why would you be that coffee?
Yeah, I think I'd be like a double espresso, because especially if I like to go at a million miles an hour, and I probably am quite poor at going slower, and I get frustrated sometimes when things aren't going as fast as I want. So it probably just feel like a massive wake up call to people, and I'm like, come on, let's get going. So yeah, I'd probably say I'm an espresso, maybe a little bit bitter from time to time, but probably an energizer as well. I like to think that I bring energy into people's lives, but maybe not always when they want it.
Okay. But sometimes people don't know, they think they don't want it, but in the end they turn around and go, yeah, actually it was a good idea, I've got to be open to that. Going forward in what you're doing, and I know you're doing the keynote speaking that you mentioned and so on, and just before we got on, we were chatting about things that you're doing. What's the future hold for you? What are you trying to do out there?
Trying to do more and more speeches and get around more and more places. People do a lot of speeches for lots of big corporates, but also in schools as well. And I think that obviously I've got to run a business, so you've got to try and make money in one area so that you can do the schools, which doesn't make any money. So really I want the business to be successful enough where I can also do stuff that is very meaningful. And although speaking is meaningful to me no matter who I speak to, I would have loved to have known some of the things I know now about how to deal with emotions and stuff like that. So I want to be able to go into schools and just give people some of those skills, but also tell them that they can dream big and that they can be whoever they want, because that's what my parents told me. And I never thought that I could be anything other than everything I wanted. So I want to give people a bit of hope. So I think that's one thing that I would really like to do. I'm also writing my second book, so that will hopefully be out next October. So I need to actually get into that. But I wrote my first book and that was really enjoyable, and I want to write a sequel to that. So the first book was Fly Higher, and it's really about mindfulness techniques. The second one is about performance and unitasking and focusing on one thing at a time and doing that one thing really well. Because I think we've forgotten how to unitask in this busy world that we live in.
I know it's available on Amazon, Flying Higher.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Where can people come and follow you and see what you're up to? Maybe reach out with support, or just if they want to engage you in that speech.
Yeah, sure. So social media, I do LinkedIn. So if you look for Sarah Furness, and I can share the links with you. And also I have a presence on Instagram as well. That's Be It Coach. So I put posts out regularly, which are hopefully value packed, and will, even if you never say hi to me, I hope that you'll get something from my posts. But do also reach out to me on LinkedIn and Instagram. My website's sarahfurness.com. Nice and easy to remember. So if you want to go and check that out, then please do reach out to me. I'd love to hear from you.
Great. We will include the links that people can get them here, because yeah, we've got those already. In closing, what kind of one piece of advice do you think you might have more? But for people that are struggling, the world's a bit crazy for them. We're in pretty rough times as a world and the economy and so on. And there's people out there struggling to maybe move forward. Do you have any advice for people that can get them off the couch, is my favorite saying, but
yeah,
moving forward and realizing they can do a lot more?
Yeah, I think I'm trying to think about what I would have wanted to hear. I think at times, you mentioned this, I imagined I was all alone, and I was the only person finding it hard, and that made me feel quite angry. And actually and also, why was I singled out? Why was it me? And I think it's to remember that, you know what, everyone is scared, everyone's got their troubles, but that doesn't mean that yours are any less than anyone else's. And it's okay to be upset and angry about it. And I think the thing with that is, was brought up with this idea that life should be fair. And I want to say to myself, just relax, life was never meant to be fair. So if it doesn't feel very fair to you right now, you haven't done anything wrong to deserve it. It's just how it is. And it's okay to be upset about that. I think that really, I just kept looking for a meaning of like, why is life so hard? Why have I been singled out? And it's just because, unfortunately, that's life. So you don't have to try and find any meaning for it.
Yeah, we all always try to look for meaning, I think, in everything. And I 100% agree with you. Life is unfair, but that's why resilience is important. And we learn resilience by getting knocked down, getting up again, and brushing it off and trying again. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time. A bit of a short episode, but I genuinely do appreciate your time. And again, thank you. I know you mentioned about doing talks at schools. You've done that for me, for the group that I work with, and it was really important that kids hear these things from people that have been there and done it, and that can impart that kind of knowledge on them. So thanks very much. We look forward to seeing your second book. I'm assuming that will go on Amazon as well.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And then just anybody, we'll put your LinkedIn and Instagram details on the post. And hopefully good luck for the future. And obviously I'll be keeping an eye on what you're doing because I'm already connected with you. Just thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me on your show.
Thanks a lot. Cheers.
That's a wrap, folks. And a big thank you to our guest. Remember, keep moving forward. The fight's not over until you decide it is. Till next time, stay bold. Stay fearless. Live life like it's too short for half measures. This is the Great Guns Podcast, signing off. And remember to subscribe to join our tribe.